This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
Well, the news just keeps getting worse, doesn't it? Every day there's more uncertainty over Brexit, the value of the pound is plummeting, the US president makes more and more gaffes, and worst of all, Liverpool are back on top of the Premier League table. But never fear, while things might look bad, we're here to be that comforting voice. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, where we'll be discussing the talking points from City's matches with Chelsea and Hoffenheim. The big news this week is the alleged racist abuse towards Raheem Sterling, so we'll be looking deeply into that with ex-City defender Nader Manua a little later on in the show. Howard Hawkins sent us more disturbing news from the future as he's managed to get a peek into what happens if City fail to retain the title this season, while we'll also be previewing the coming games with Everton and Leicester as well. I'm your host David Mooney and I'm joined this week from the American Citizens podcast, Josh Webb-Thompson.
Hello everybody.
How are you doing, Josh? You well?
You know what? It's a beautiful day.
That's good to hear. And as a special guest joining me in the studio, we've got former City striker and Academy graduate Leon Mike. Leon, how are you?
Guys? You okay?
I'm good, thanks. So we'll kick off with the games against Chelsea and Hoffenheim. Looking first off, Leon, at the Premier League picture, how does City respond to that defeat now, do you think?
They're probably going to win in the next 10 games, in all honesty. Listen, if anyone's...
Music to my ears, that is.
Well, no, if anyone's looking at that game as anything that sort of represents a turning point in the season where City start falling away, I just can't see it. The football they play is too good. They've got players in every position that can be replaced. Yeah, the boys look a bit tired now, but you know the season's getting into full swing. Champions League just about finished, so they're going to get to rest some of them as well. But I'd see it absolutely no reason to worry whatsoever.
Josh, from your point of view, I mean, I don't know about you, but you know, I've discovered that I'm not very good at losing anymore.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed that people don't know how to handle losing.
I was really angry. After that game, I was absolutely no reason. Chelsea were the better team. You know, they deserved to win the game. I was fuming.
I think I was fuming because you opened that season with the Community Shield and City just dominated Chelsea. It was what you expect. But then you have to remember that this is a Chelsea team that is just getting started under their coach, too. So you kind of expect them to get a little better. But I was in the same boat as you. That game was on obscenely early for us. So I got up, avoided the score, and then did the rewatch. And I'm sitting here watching this thing. And about halfway through it, I'm like, all right, I have to know. Because it just felt like it was going to be one of those days, didn't it?
It was, I mean, do you think part of the problem is that City don't go behind that often? So it's difficult to kind of know what to do to respond when they do fall behind.
I mean, it can be, right? It's weird for me to think of a team needing to be motivated to respond, right? Like, that should be the bare minimum if you're a team with title aspirations, because it's going to happen over the course of a season. And if you're a team with multiple title aspirations, then it should be commonplace. It is a bit difficult and there are certainly downsides to going down. It sort of takes the game away from you and you have to chase it. But it's something you have to have ingrained in your DNA if you're going to play for a club that wants to be the best in the world. And I know we'll get to it, but I think that maybe the Chelsea game was just a case of we've won so much that eventually you need to be reminded that you can be beaten, right?
Well, I was going to say, Leon, the first kind of 40 minutes of that game, City didn't let Chelsea out of their own box for long spells of it. Yeah. But they just kept missing chances. You know, as a former striker yourself, do you ever feel, you know, even 40 minutes into a game, it might not be my day, you know? Or do you just think, I just want one more chance?
I think the top players always want to keep getting in there and keep getting chances. If we were talking about this game in the sense that City went 80 minutes in the whole game and didn't really create any chances and Chelsea had all the play, I'd say maybe you've got something to worry about. But if City score first, it's a different game.
They're just a bit of a freak, that's it.
Yeah, they played the same football. They you know, were slick. They made chances. They broke lines. They just couldn't find the net on the day. And sometimes, as a footballer, it doesn't matter how hard you try, it's not going to happen.
It just won't go in.
No, it just won't.
How worried do you think City fans should be that effectively Chelsea scored with their first and only chance and then from that point on City just couldn't get back into the game?
I think it probably knocked the wind out of them. If you look at the game, when Chelsea scored, City probably looked at it and thought, are you serious? you know, we've basically dominated the whole game, and obviously, you know, Chelsea have come back and nicked one and then nicked another. I don't think there's any recourse to be worried. Again, we'll see how they react on Saturday or Sunday, whenever the game is. But I can't see there being a problem. I really can't. One defeat in God knows how long, you know, it's no reason for anyone to panic. And Manchester City fans, like you, David, you know, you should know. Come on, you should be well versed in losing.
First sign of trouble, mate. Yeah,
moving back to Main Road. Yeah. No, listen, it's a blip. That's it.
Josh, are you concerned by the fact that it was Chelsea's one and only chance that kind of took the wind out of City's sails?
You know, it's never a good thing, and certainly this was a problem last year, right? And so you look at this, and your mind goes to, crap, is this going to be similar to last year where teams were scoring on their only chances? I'm not going to hit the panic button right now unless this starts happening across the year. You know, if you start to see this with more and more teams scoring on their first and only chance, I think that was the whole reason you've seen the promotion of Laporte to pretty much an everyday must play this guy, because he stabilized that back line in such a way that they're no longer making those mistakes. And this was just, it's not been a good week for Laporte. I mean, it's not going to happen. You're not going to be on your A game every week, but it's not been his best week. But I think these things do happen. They're just going to happen. Chelsea are too good. If you look at the composition of their team, they're too good not to be able to do what they did, even against a team like City, because we expect that City could do it to a team like them, right?
Well, let's inject a little bit of positivity into this then. Like Leon said, it's 9 losses since the start of last season. That's 81 games, so that's one in every 9 games that they've lost, which actually sounds a lot more than it is in real terms. Like I said, Leon, do you think that actually we've just forgotten all how to lose?
100%. I think what you find now,
because in your day we lost every week, so
well,
it's
thanks for that. I think it's just a case of you're used to winning now, and when you don't win, you throw the toys out the pram. And that's just any football fan. That's just Manchester City fans. That's any football fan.
I don't know if it's the social media era as well, because when City were rubbish in the old days and we were all kind of used to losing, there was no social media to kind of scope what the fans were thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, the atmosphere at Main Road at times was quite hostile and quite, you know, quite negative. Yeah. But after that, you kind of forgot about it all. And then next week, you went in complete ignorance of how bad it had got.
Yeah, 100%. The social media definitely amps everything up. I mean, you can go on social media and have a go at your favourite player now. You can have a go at the manager. You can have a go at the club. So it's a lot more accessible. Back in the day, the players would go home and hide for a few days. Now there is no hiding.
Well, Pep's had a good run, so if it ends now, it ends now, doesn't it? That's what we say here.
I think everyone else in the Premier League would be thinking, please let it end.
Right, so this is what Guardiola had to say after the Hoffenheim game on Wednesday.
In general, 90 minutes, Phil was incredible the way he played. So I never had, I don't have, and I think I will never have doubts about the quality of that guy. He's able to play with us. It doesn't matter where. But it's not just the quality that he has with the ball. It's the way he fought. He is, looks like skinny, looks like not strong, but he's really, really strong. And arriving the byline, cross, shoots. He's an outstanding young player. He's a huge talent. I think England has a diamond. I know it's not easy to play in the big clubs. You know, few players with 18 years old can play regularly, but play with, have to compete in a good way with David Silva, with Kevin De Bruyne, with Gundogan, with Bernardo. So it's not easy. But he's incredible in the training sessions every day, put absolutely everything. He's patient, so he has minutes, and he will have in the future a lot.
After the defeat at Chelsea at the weekend, was it important to make sure that there was a victory tonight?
Well, yeah, different competition. I know for the stats it's good. In the season one, in the circuits, it was after one draw, lose games, immediately we make victories in a row. But today with different competition, the competition qualify, we already qualify and try to finish it. But it's good, yeah, that's true. When you lose, break immediately and try to win.
Why do you think you've struggled more in the Champions League this season rather than the Premier League?
Well, it's more difficult because the opponents are better. They have more quality. Football, it depends on the quality of the players. The other is theories. I'm here every 3 days talking about my opinions. You ask me, I answer. But that doesn't count, not too much. So big teams are out. Inter de Milan is an exceptional team in Europa League. So many, many good top clubs will be there. And one day you slip a little bit, you will be in Europa League. When a team like Manchester City go through, it's an incredible success. I think all the teams go through is an incredible success. The people say, ah, they have to do that. No, no. It's so demanding. So that's why he's tried to arrive in February in a good moment, a good condition to try to compete with the other ones.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Pep Guardiola speaking after the game against Hoffenheim there. Josh, in almost a complete role reversal in that game, City were flat until they went behind and then they responded. So kind of throw out everything we've just said, really, yeah?
Yeah, that does. I mean, it definitely was a penalty for Kramaric, so I understand why Hoffenheim went ahead there. It was really odd to see City sort of... It was funny because I sent out a tweet. I didn't send it to Leroy Sané. That needs to be specified. I sent out a tweet, though, and I was like, wow, Leroy Sané always does the wrong thing in the box, because he was early on in that game. He was just not making the right moves. And then, you know, later on in the game, City sort of grew into it after they went behind, and then they sort of became that attacking threat you thought they would be. Until the three-on-none, which somebody needs to talk about, the three-on-none in how City... If any club were going to do it, it was going to be City that were going to miss a three-on-none.
Leon, talk us through that. How, you know, you threw on goal, you've got a teammate, you've got two teammates square. How do you not score?
I think it's indecision. In those instances, it's always indecision. The man on the ball with a chance to score will be thinking, unless he's Aguero or maybe Jesus, will be thinking... Should I pass or should I shoot? That's what will be going through their head. Someone like Aguero, there's absolutely
just
no doubt.
Bottom corner, I'm burying
this. He's thinking bottom corner, but he's got the quality to say, if I don't feel confident, I can fake to shoot and play one of my teammates. And so that's all it is, composure.
Well, I mean, Josh, you mentioned Leroy Sané's performance. What do you think of his display overall? Because, I mean, certainly the free kick was insanely good. And then, you know, it was a nice finish for the second one as well.
Yeah, he took that first touch, went around the keeper and buried it as you would expect he would. He sort of grew into the game, I thought, too. And I mean, young players, that's the thing with being a young player. And sometimes we forget how young Sané and Sterling are. They're going to make mistakes. There's going to be indecision. That's sort of the thing of it. It is indecision. And that's all it was when they missed that three on none is you almost got down into the box and then you outthink yourself. You're like, I'm going to do this. And it just sort of.
Then time's run out, hasn't it?
Yeah, you get your merds all mixed up and you start balking tack words. And then by the time you have made a decision, that the goalie's done the right thing and has pretty much cut off all opportunity.
Did you have to write that down to say that properly?
No, actually, it's my mother ingrained in me when I was a kid. She said it all the time, and I found it so funny that I always remembered it.
Give it to us once more.
You get your merds all mixed up and start balking tack words.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I don't know if that's from Texas or what. I know not where it comes from. I've never researched it. So somebody will have to and let me know.
Let us know. Tweet us at Blue Moon Podcast. Tell us if you know where it comes from. Let us know. Yeah. Just want to look at a bit further back in the midfield. Gundogan, did you get the impression he's kind of proved that nobody does Fernandinho's job quite like Fernandinho, Josh?
Yeah, I like... Gundogan's actually been one of my favorite players, even when he was back at Dortmund. I love the guy. Like Dortmund as well as a team. But he's been a decent enough midfielder, but I don't see him as a great defensive mid mind, if that makes sense. He can sometimes do the wrong thing, take the wrong angle, and it leaves City open to counters. I like him. I cheer for the guy. I always will. I just wonder about his efficacy.
And we've also talked, Leon, about Phil Foden in our Patreon show, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, if you want to have a listen to that. But how do you think he did, especially in the second half of that game? Because there was one moment where he volleyed it and the keeper touched it over the bar and everybody in the ground was going, oh, why couldn't that one have gone in? You know, first Etihad goal and that would have been it, you know.
Listen, I think there's, first and foremost, there's going to be plenty of goals. Top corner, bottom corner from Phil Foden from Manchester City. Phil Foden did fine. He's a classy player. He's He's got such a good touch. His first touch sets everything else up. I love the way he plays. And the fact that he's left-footed as well, that unorthodox left foot, it helps him. He grows into games, and I think that comes with being a young player, like, you know, Josh mentioned before. Young players need time, you know, 15, 20 games in a run, you know, to find the consistency. And the hardest thing to find as a footballer, not just a young player, is consistency in your game.
Josh, were you head in hands when the keeper got his fingertips on that volley?
Yeah, anytime you see a shot like that not go in, I feel like I've been robbed of something. That thing would have been probably the most sensational goal I've seen out of Phil Foden.
You kind of know, don't you, that I mean, I know that obviously, Josh, you weren't at the game, but the roof will go off the Etihad when Foden gets his first home goal, won't it?
You know, I screamed loud enough that my dogs, they're huskies, they're the most empathetic dogs in the world. They thought someone was in trouble and they went and ran and hid. Like, I screamed that loud. So I can assume if one of me screamed that loud, that tens of thousands probably screamed a bit louder.
Now, let's touch on Gabriel Jesus, Leon, because obviously he didn't start at Chelsea. Guardiola went with no strikers at all at Stamford Bridge. He kind of looks like he needs a goal, but then you remember that he had a hat-trick a few weeks ago. So what's up with him, do you think?
I don't think there's anything up for me. I think, again, when we talk about young players, we talk about consistency, not just in your game, but in finding opportunities in the first team. And, you know, poor guy, he's got Aguero in front of him. he's probably got another year or two of that sort of waiting in the wings. Listen, he's a good player. He's a very good player. And he works really hard. So he's fine. I think it's just, again, a case of finding consistency. And once he does find the consistency, he'll be in the team more.
What did you find when if you were in and ever went through a dry spell where you just couldn't find the net? What did you have anything that would help? Anything like any techniques that would kind of calm you down?
Well, again, something I learned from Sean Goulter. I mentioned it earlier. You would just have maybe someone put 10 crosses in from the right, 10 crosses in from the left, empty goal, and just put the ball in the net. Because what tends to happen is when your confidence is low, you try to smash the net. You try and put the ball top corner. You have to find confidence for those things to happen. So you do the simple things first, which is just put the ball in the net, then the flashy finishes will come later.
Brilliant. And just finally, Josh, I'm going to give the last word on Hoffenheim to you, because we very rarely talk about Ederson's goalkeeping. We always talk about his footwork and his calmness and how he can pass the ball. But then when you look back to that save in the first half, you know, he's got a cracking save in him as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, we spend so much time, so much more time talking about Ederson's offensive ability than we do his defensive prowess, right? And we kind of forget that this guy is a world-class keeper. In fact, it's baffling to me. I'm going to take a run at Liverpool here. It is baffling to me that they're, and I get why their fans are excited about Alisson, given what he represents in a change from Mignolet and Karius. But I gotta say, man, the total that they paid for Alisson when City have basic, I'm pretty sure the guy who's gonna take his job by the next World Cup. I just do. I think that Ederson is in because he is so good defensively and he gives you something offensively. He is a dangerous weapon in goal. I think he's one of the best in the world.
And just looking ahead then, obviously the draw for the knockout phase of the Champions League takes place on Monday at 11 a.m. UK time. City's options are actually quite limited in this one, Leon. You can get Ajax, Atletico Madrid, Roma or Schalke, because every other English team finished second in their group. There doesn't look to be an easy draw there.
No, there doesn't. But to be honest with you, if you were an Atletico fan or, you know, a fan of one of the other clubs, you're probably thinking, oh, come on.
Don't want Guardiola City, do we? Yeah.
We don't want them in the last 16, maybe in the semis or the final, but people will be looking at City, I think, as the favourites, in my opinion.
I know it's a 1-in-4 shot, but take a punt, who do you reckon they'll get?
I'd say Atletico, because they're tough defensively.
Typical City, yeah. Joshua, who do you reckon?
Yeah, I don't have an inkling of who they're going to get, but I'm in the camp of give me Atletico or give me death. I think that it can't hurt City to play a tough team like Atletico out of the gate. You have to beat a team like that to win this competition anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking. It's from now on in. It's a knockout competition. Give me the easiest draw all the way through. Because if they went on to win it and beat, you know, beat every single easiest draw that they could possibly get. Nobody would remember that in 30 years' time, would they? Right, well, we'd like to be sitting here only discussing what happened on the pitch this week. Instead, there was another unsavoury incident at Stamford Bridge. I've been looking at what happened and the environment in which football allowed it to happen. On Sunday, Raheem Sterling posted two photographs to Instagram. In his caption, he said he just had to laugh when he was targeted by alleged racist abuse from the stands. It's been a huge talking point this week, especially after a banana skin was thrown towards Arsenal's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. However, as former City defender Nader Manua told us, racist abuse isn't a new thing.
This stuff goes on all the time. Like one of my friends and old City player, Shailen Logan, I think he's received it a few times up in Scotland playing for Aberdeen. And when you look at it and you think of where we are in society, it seems so wrong. But then the flip side of it is, I think things are still being said, but I think more people know now that it's wrong, yet still they have those views and they're more than willing to share it in the open forum, whether it's in a stadium, whether it's online, whether it's face-to-face, which is, I think that's the biggest problem.
Sterling's post pointed the finger at the press, who have reported similar stories on white and black players differently for a long time. Adam Keyworth is a City fan who's been keeping track of the negative reporting around Sterling in a thread on Twitter.
There was something in the press that day about Sterling and I thought I'll tweet about this. But then going back through some other stories that I think I'd tweeted about before, I just thought, all right, I'll put a few of these together. And then as I put two or three together, I thought, Christ, this is really depressing. I think there was about 15 just in one go.
The language in those sorts of stories has helped to create an environment where incidents like Saturday's can happen. Leon Mann founded BCOMS, the black collective of media in sport.
I've seen over the years the language used towards black footballers is all around physicality. You know, there's a real emphasis on physicality, on speed, strength. However, there's never really any talk about the thoughts, the cleverness. It's all about that physicality, that the raw strength. Raw is a word that's used quite a lot. And also there's a real questioning of attitude and commitment that seems to be applied to black players constantly, in a way that I don't believe it's applied to white footballers.
He adds that it was obvious with how a previous City great was talked about as well.
I know Yaya Toure, and I think he's a good example here. He's always been described as the beast. I think to anyone who watches him play, I mean, he's more like a ballerina in terms of the way he actually caresses the ball. He sees angles others don't. He's an artist on the pitch. Of course, he has those incredible runs in his armoury, but that involves skill, the way he's moving his feet, this balance. All of those elements seem to have not been given, you know, the same prominence in commentary.
And Nader Manua explains how that can affect what people think of players.
When you think about the way that things can be portrayed, especially with the thing that Raheem highlighted with Tolzin and with Phil, it seems like Tolzin, his career is already being judged and criticised before it's even begun. And that's just through certain ways that language can be used. And I think it's more troubling for me when someone doesn't know that they're doing it in the way that they write headlines, because they're basically fueling something which, you know, it doesn't really affect them, but it greatly affects someone who shouldn't be getting affected by such a negative stereotype.
He says those preconceptions can then consistently filter through into reports.
For some people, when it came to ratings, some people will start from an 8, and if they play badly, drop to a 7. If they play well, they go up to a 9. Whereas for other people, they start at 0. People get treated one way, and someone else that probably deserves the same treatment will be treated another.
Anuwa also says that sort of bias can seep into punditry, especially when experts are asked to comment on matches that they haven't seen. Adam Keyworth thinks there could be subconscious problems too.
I'm not in any place to say whether it's done in a purposeful way, that these people who are writing these dogs articles on Sterling are being racist because they mean to be, or whether it's just because they don't know they are being, and they see him as fair game, and that's part of the issue.
The makeup of the newsroom could also be a contributing factor. Leon Mann explains how important a range of backgrounds can be when it comes to deciding the news agenda.
My feeling is, from experience and from knowing the dynamic across the media, that there will be a bunch of white men making decisions around the sensitivities in communities they are not part of, by having greater diversity in those newsrooms where those decisions are made, we'll have more thorough decisions. And that might mean that those same decisions are made, but they will do that knowing the consequences of their actions.
Up to this point, Sterling had remained silent about the criticism he's had in the press and from the stands. The only fans who could have a negative reaction to him are Liverpool's, since he left to join a rival in 2015. But for a good 18-month spell, the winger was abused at every away ground in the country. Adam Keyworth wonders why it's taken an incident like this one for there to be a realisation that something is wrong.
The fact that it's taken something so horrific as to what's seemingly happened on Saturday to make certain members of the press come out and say this is terrible and all of these comments, it's all I think is, where have you been for the last 2 years? Their colleagues have been at it for two last years have been the worst, but they've been at it since he left Liverpool.
The way that image of Sterling has been built up across both print and broadcast media then causes a problem. Leon Mann explains.
The vast, vast majority, 99.9% of people who have interactions with Raheem Sterling, it will be through the media. So the media have a huge, huge role in terms of how people view Raheem Sterling, in terms of how they feel about Raheem Sterling, in terms of how they act and behave towards Raheem Sterling. So it's vital, really, that it is a true representation. That's got to be at the heart of everything the media does. It's about truth.
Sterling's been praised both for his statements and his reaction to the Chelsea fans on the day, but Nedumanua believes it's a one-way street.
He is going to lose more than those fans are going to lose if he reacts to it, even though the things that have been said to him are very unfair. It's not right, you know, it's some of it's allegedly it's discrimination, it's horrible. But if he was to say anything back, he'd be getting charged by the FA, the PFA would be speaking to him, supporters trust and stuff like that would be getting at him, and his reputation would be one which unfortunately for him would be far worse, so he has to just accept it.
This is football journalist Greg Johnson. He says the fact that Sterling's expected not to react in the face of something so abhorrent doesn't reflect well either.
By always expecting black athletes to suffer racism to turn you a cheek and be the bigger man, you're narrowing the acceptable scope of responses they can, and in a way denying them their emotions. It shouldn't be on the person who's the victim to come out and be the bigger man.
Though he does suggest a solution.
We stop giving people like me and Piers Morgan and people that aren't affected by these things the platform to say things, and we give it to people who have been affected by this. And I'm not saying Sterling, because he's already carrying enough by himself, but let's give the microphone to people who are affected by this.
The lack of black and ethnic minority voices in sports journalism is a real problem, and if we're being honest, it's a problem we face here on the Blue Moon podcast too. In the 10 years we've done the show, the vast majority of the people who've spoken on it have been white. When it comes to looking ahead to the future, Leon Mann thinks the situation isn't hopeless, though.
Football fans really led the change in addressing racism in football. And that's not often given the credit that is due. It was football fans who started turning around to each other and saying, shut up, you're not part of my club. We need that culture to continue. We need people to be brave, but we need people to be supported. Stewards have a job, clubs have a huge responsibility, and the authorities do too.
But it's clear there's still a long way to go. This last few weeks has highlighted the work that needs to be done to change attitudes. And Nedumanua explains an uncomfortable truth about why this isn't a new story across football grounds.
If you had a good friend and you said something to them which offended them, they'll tell you that they're offended and they'll probably ask you to never say it again. And if you saw that it really hurt them, you probably wouldn't say it again because you cared. So then it begs the question, when people come out and say that what you're doing is wrong in terms of a race perspective, why does it keep coming back still? And the bottom line is, it's because people overall don't really care. And whether it's subtle racism or blatantly obvious racism, they don't care.
Raheem Sterling deserves credit for speaking out, but he shouldn't have to speak out, nor should he have to maintain a dignified silence. If there's one thing that's clear from the recent incidents, it's time to have a long, hard look at how we deal with racism in both football and society, and how we report on non-white players. It's time to change.
Hi, this is Sean Gutter, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
A look there at the latest racist incidents in football. And just before we move on, I just want to listen to what Nader Manua said. Not all of his interview went into that piece. This is what Manua told us about his experience of growing up in Manchester.
I think being raised in Manchester in the 90s, I did experience a few things. My whole family did, because we came from Nigeria, and we were at the time, I think, one of the very few, if not the only, black family that was in Mars Platting around that time. So people saw us as being very different, and they treated us as being very different almost from the get-go and throughout my entire time there. And it wasn't nice, to be honest. It was a tough time, especially because we were trying to adapt to a new country, and people just weren't really willing to help us achieve that. Obviously, some people were, but I'll be honest, the vast majority weren't. And then the time passed, and I joined Man City's academy when I was 10, and we played in a few international tournaments, and some of the places that you'd go, and some of the countries, and some of the teams that you'd see, some of them never couldn't speak a word of English, except for to be able to swear at you, or to say like an N-word to me. And it was strange, because I just thought to myself, like, What is this? Is this what I am? Is this what the world is? And in fairness, it got better over time. And I think a lot of that was because people's voices started to be heard now. You know, if someone said they were offended, you know, people and the authorities and so on started to finally try and get behind them and support them instead of ridiculing them. Because it's hard to be the minority. Trying to, in a group of 10, one or two people saying something, you know, people listen to what you're going to say, but the fact is the 8 are the ones who are going to make the decisions. Whereas now I feel like more people are going to listen and understand and, you know, pay attention as such.
Check out exclusive City interviews on our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
Nader Manua talking about his growing up in Manchester. Now, Leon, I mean, we can't not talk about this incident for Raheem Sterling this week. First off, what are your experiences when it comes to kind of racism and the game of football?
I've had it, as I would suggest most, if not all, other black players or players of ethnicity I've had in the game. My first experience of it was playing for my town team, Trafford Boys. I was only 30 at the time, and I was called a name by a boy. I had no idea what it was he called me, so I asked him what it was, and he had no idea himself, and the game just carried on. And yeah, I had it in my professional career as well, from players and from fans of the opposite, you know, the opposite club we were playing against. So my experience, I used to kind of let it roll off my back. That was my way of dealing with it. And, you know, Raheem's kind of adopted the same kind of thing. Obviously, he's come out and said what he said on Instagram the other day, because, let's be honest, there is... I mean, I've seen it for years, and I've had conversations with other people about it. You can see there is a difference the way the press reports on black players to the way it does on white players. That's just a fact, and if anyone's going to tell me any different, then I want to see proof, because I've got plenty of proof
the other way
to support my claim.
Well, I mean, what challenges do black players face when it comes? Because I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm holding my hands up. I'm a white man, so I don't face these challenges.
Yeah, preconceptions. You know, from as long as I can remember, there's a preconception that black players are lazy, and you've got to work them harder than you have with other people. And I remember my dad telling me, you know, as a black man going into, you know, football, you're going to have to be twice as good as your white counterparts, and you're going to have to work twice as harder. So it's been there, you know, as long as I can remember. And it's hard, because you don't want to be seen with as the guy in the changing room with a chip on your shoulder, which has been said many a time. But at the same time, you think, well, if I can see it, why can't you?
You can't just let it slide either,
can you?
You
can't just let it slide. But there is that sort of, I think it's just an understanding, you know, of what the player's actually going through at the time. You know, if you're being, you know, having racial abuse hurled at you week in, week out, then, you know, you're not going to go home feeling very good about yourself.
Have we been complacent about tackling it, do you think?
complacent, maybe. I would go as far as saying neglectful. I'll go as far as saying neglectful. We have, kick it out and show racism, the red card, but they happen on a day. The players wear a T-shirt, they wave a couple of flags, and then it's over. What needs to happen? This is what it is for me. If someone feels comfortable that they can spout racial abuse at somebody, whether it be on the pitch or whether it be from the stand, if someone feels comfortable, then the conditions are right for them to feel comfortable. If you make the conditions that they feel uncomfortable doing that, then it's going to stop, you know? And that doesn't mean we eradicate racism, because it just happens behind closed doors then. But what it does, what does happen is it doesn't happen in public. People aren't, you know, things that happen, the thing that happened to Raheem on Saturday doesn't happen. Or if it does happen, they're ejected straight away. So what needs to happen, there has to be a culture of, zero tolerance. And also, as I say, the press have got a big responsibility. People, you keep saying that, you know, the rates reported doesn't have anything to do with it. Well, it does. And if you create or cultivate a culture of hate and, prejudice, then that's going to fester. And it's not just football, it's society.
I wanted to ask Leon a quick question. Leon, what age did your parents give you the talk? The talk that I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I probably had that kind of talk with my mum and my dad, and my granddad, probably at about the age of 8 or 9.
Okay, so it happens as early over there as it does here. Again, it has to be stressed that I'm a white dude talking about this, but I try to be familiar with the goings-on. And I think it's nearly impossible to say that the climate isn't conducive to hate. I mean, I realize this probably isn't going to endear me to some people, but I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, you look no further than my country. Hate crimes have gone up since the induction of a certain person. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. You have more and more police here shooting unarmed black men and women. White folks with a million guns are talked down from the ledge over here, while guys like Stephon Clark are shot 21 times and then later found to be holding a damn cell phone. This is our lives. Leon mentioned those comments. I tried hitting up Jim Beglin about his comments about Raheem Sterling, because he put out that tweet, oh, disgusting, racist, zero Raheem Sterling. And I'm like, so Jim, I assume that this tweet is going to be accompanied by apology to all the things you said about him. And I can remind you of these things if you need. And he's like, by all means, go ahead and remind me. So I showed him the tweet where he called Raheem greedy. I showed him the tweet where he called Raheem a locker room poison. I showed him the tweet where he said Raheem's move away from Liverpool, it was ignoble. Ignoble was the exact word that he used about a move, about a transfer. And he's criticizing the guy's agent when he wants to deflect some of it. And I'm like, well, that's the agent's job. So that's not really doing anything for me. But these criticisms, they're inherent. They are inherent to institutionalized racism. He brought up black players. They're seen as lazy. You got to work them harder. But white folks also see black players as people who owe them. Raheem Sterling owed Liverpool. Liverpool made Raheem Sterling. Not the years, not the hours, not the decades of blood, sweat, and tears that Raheem Sterling put into making his own footballing career a success. None of that made Raheem Sterling. It was Liverpool. And these types of comments are rooted in racism, and the thought that we own a black man and his future, but we wish well to folks like Milner or even Coutinho when they move on. Like, it's baffling to me that some people cannot see their own racism in tweets. It's just truly baffling to me.
I think there's only one kind of real way to finish this discussion as well, Leon. I mean it's all well and good us sitting here in the studio and saying, no, it's time, that this is wrong, something needs to be done. What do we do? Is it simply as much as whenever you hear this stuff, is just say, hang on, this isn't on, that you can't say that?
Yeah, you make it uncomfortable for people to act that way in public. You know, at the end of the day, again, if you look at where these things happen, if you look at Saturday if you isolate Saturday as an incident, there's three or four guys shouting abuse at Raheem Sterling, and there's actually no one around them telling them to stop or saying, don't do that. There's actually a black guy stood about three seats away just watching these guys hurl abuse at another black guy. Now, I'm not saying he should have done something.
Well, again, it shouldn't necessarily fall on his shoulders.
On him, but what I'm saying is he got to have felt uncomfortable. Now, he may not have felt comfortable enough to say, what are you doing? Or who do you think you're talking to, kind of thing? Because, you know, the conditions inside the football ground are conducive to hate and abuse. Moving forward, for me, you've got to make it uncomfortable for racists, for people of a prejudicial slant. You've got to make sure that if they are racist, if they have racist views, that's fine. Off you go. You know, don't come back to the football club. You're not allowed at games, and you know, you're not what we deem as a supporter at this club. It has to be that harsh. You see, people get fined more for, I don't know, a two-footed tackle, generally speaking.
Well, take the UA, for example, on, was it Porto or Sporting Lisbon, where Yaya Toure was racially abused, mm-hmm. Mario Balotelli were racially abused, mm-hmm. and City were fined more for being late to the second half.
Exactly.
And you're kind of saying, if we're going to be serious about this problem, we need mm-hmm. to actually act like we're being serious about
100%.
It.
100%. And let's be straight about it. This isn't a football problem, it's a societal problem. And this, you know, in society, we've got a culture at the minute that people feel comfortable in saying or expressing their racist views and prejudicial views at the minute because, you know, I'm allowed, it's free speech. Of course you're allowed. But some of the stuff I read, some of the stuff I hear, some of the stuff I see, it's disgusting. You know, I wouldn't speak to another human being in that way. And I wouldn't think of another human being in that way. And we really do need to take a look at ourselves and say, what are we doing here? Are we just paying lip service? Is it another moment for show races in the red card, or another moment for kick it out to get involved and then everything be swept under the carpet?
And what I would say is freedom of speech is not freedom of consequences as well. So
exactly.
So you can be free to say what you want, but you don't not absolve from the consequences. It feels a bit trite moving on and talking about Everton and Leicester after such a heavy discussion, but we need to, and we need to talk about City's upcoming fixtures. Josh, City are a little bit like the walking wounded at the moment because of the number of injuries they've got. How big a problem is that for them, do you reckon?
Well, they've played the best teams in the league. They've already played them away. So I think if you were going to be injured, this is the time to do it, right? You never want injuries. I think that doesn't really need to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway. You never want injuries, but I think that when you do look at the talent across the board, City has the ability to weather this storm. The only question mark that I have, and this is sort of my point about Gabriel Jesus, is I think playing behind Aguero kind of hurts Gabriel Jesus, because the discrepancy when one is on the field versus the other, and what you get out of one versus what you get out of the other, even though they are not even remotely close to being the same player, it is rather drastic, and teams can play City a different way. This isn't a knock so much on Jesus. I think he's great. I think he's got great link-up play, but he is a step down, I think, from what you get with going from a world-class striker. I think Goal rated him as the second-best striker in the world. I think there might be a case for another forward, but yeah, I still think Jesus is going to be the question mark for the team during this stretch.
Now, Leon, Everton have been a bit up and down recently. How much of a problem will they be? I mean, also bear in mind on this one, I didn't realise this before we all predicted wins for this game, but Guardiola's never beaten Everton at home. It's only two games, but he's never beaten them at home.
Yeah, listen, Everton have got some really good players. I like Richarlison, Sigurdsson's another one who's decent. They've got Digne, the fullback. So they've not got a bad team. But I would expect City to win that game, regardless of whether they're not beating Everton at home in the last 2 years. You know, that's rubbish. at the end of the day, it's a game.
Aren't footballers supposed to be superstitious?
Some.
So what's that bring his overall record to at Merseyside then?
I've no idea about the away record, Josh, because I mean, it's generally it's not great on Merseyside, come what may, blue or red. So I try not to look at it, to be honest with you.
There's always been the Mancunian Scouse rivalry,
yeah.
Whether it be the footballers, the football clubs or the players on the pitch, there's always that extra bite when a team from Liverpool plays a team from Manchester. There just is. I don't know what it is, whether we're both from the Northwest and see ourselves as the biggest cities in the Northwest or whatever, but there is always that extra bite.
It's daft as well, because we all know it's Manchester that's the bigger one. I don't know what the criticism
is. There's no dispute whatsoever.
Just moving on to the League Cup as well, because it's the quarter-final stage now. So, Josh, is this the point where we kind of go, actually, got a chance of winning it, might take it a bit more seriously from now on in?
I don't know. I mean, you always should take everything seriously, right? But the truth of the matter is teams like this aren't going to take some games seriously. I don't think Leicester have the quality to put City out this year. You mentioned the Mahrez one in the run sheet here, but the problem with that is Mahrez now plays for the team in Manchester. So I don't really think Leicester have the quality to put City out. I think it's a favorable draw. I wouldn't take it lightly, but I don't know if you have to take it super seriously, if that makes sense.
Well, Josh mentioned Mahrez there, Leon. He missed the penalty at this stage last season that sent City through. So, I mean, there's certainly that's not an option anymore. City have got to do it without him missing penalties now.
Yeah. listen, Josh mentioned that, quality of Leicester might not be enough to beat City. Cup football's a bit different. Form tends to go out the window. I mean, I've predicted that City will win comfortably, just because of how good they are at the minute. But in a cup game, you honestly can't tell what's going to happen. In a one-off tie, sometimes, look at Chelsea Saturday. City missed chances after chance and then bang, sucker punch. So that could happen, but in my opinion, it's not going to.
You look at the League Cup as well. City have had a bit of a love affair with it recently. Won it in 2014, 2016, 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it one of the competitions that actually, because there's no real pressure on to go out and win, because it's everybody's fourth choice, actually you can enjoy it a bit more?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the players can enjoy it. I think also if you bring the likes of Foden into it and they get sort of longer game time, that's always a bonus. I think I look at it this season, I think City have got their eye on the Champions League. I just think they're going to put all their eggs in that basket, and obviously the bread and butter of the Premier League. The League Cup, I don't know why they can't give some of the younger ones a run. Foden should be playing every game in that 90 minutes, no question in my opinion. Another few players should be sort of fed in.
Josh, are you a bit more on board with the League Cup these days?
Yeah, I love it. It's a great trophy, and I think one of the things that you can do with it is it adds to the overall hardware, right? If you win a league title, you can turn that single into a double. And it's sort of like you said, David, other teams don't take the competition seriously. It's their fourth choice. So it's something that you can win. You can win early. You can sort of wrap it up, get it out of the way, it sort of just adds to the overall success of the season. And as Leon mentioned, I think it's important that you get the young players minutes in those games. So it's a chance to bring along some of these young talent, let them pick up some of the bonuses in their contracts, and for some of the veterans as well to get a rest in the game, though these days nobody really needs a rest since everybody's injured.
Right, well, there were no correct predictions on last week's show, so we're hoping to change that for this week. We've linked up with William Hill to raise money for the Christie Cancer Hospital in Manchester with a charity bet on all of City's games. Each panellist is getting a £10 correct score single, and the total for the campaign so far is £495. Another two chances to add to it with Everton and Leicester on the horizon. We'll start with Leon. What have you gone for the Everton game?
4-2 City.
4-2 City is 28-1. So a nice £280 if you're right on that one. And for Leicester, you've gone for?
3-0 City.
3-0 is 17-2, so that would be £85 if you're right. Josh, what have you gone for Everton-wise?
I got poached, so I'm going to go with 2-1.
2-1 is 8-1, which is £80. And Leicester?
I've decided to make it difficult for myself, and I'm going to go with 4-1.
Well, 4-1, if you're right, is 16-1, so it'd be a nice £160. So I hope that Leon's right on the Everton game, you're right on the Leicester game. We'll really bump up that money, because I've gone for 3-1 against Everton, which is 17-2 and £85, and 2-1 against Leicester, which is 7-1 and £70. Now, remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and for more information about responsible gambling, visit begambleaware.org. Now, then, a fortnight ago, we received a clip from the future version of Howard Hockin, and it's happened again this week as he continues to play with the time-space continuum. Here he is.
Hello? Hello? The light's on. Good. I guess we should begin. Hashtag YNWA. It's me again. I'm talking to you from the future once more. 2027 this time. One day after Professor Brian Cox has invented time travel for audio clips, as there is no time to waste. Things are most definitely not getting better. You lied to us, Brian. Hashtag YNWA. I'm here to apologise. Last time I told all City fans to take a stand against their owners for the good of the world, because by failing to do so would lead to a post-apocalyptic world where those that survived the purge of 2025 rummaged through bins for food and fought off rats and cockroaches in a daily bid for survival. Yeah, well, you'll laugh at this, but it turns out that was the better option. Hashtag YNWA. You see, once my original message reached you all and went viral on Lad Bible, not forgetting, of course, the 6,450-page thread on Blue Moon, you bitter blues all listened to me. You shaved off your moustaches, broke free from your chains, and stood up to the man. For the first time, empty seats started appearing at matches. Citizens went bust. Sales of pies plummeted and a boycott of City Square devastated the local community. All good, you say. But the problem is that I had not for one moment contemplated the dire consequences of what I suggested. The dire consequences of all of this. I thought we'd be making the world a better place. I was wrong. Hashtag YNWA. For some reason, rival fans did not applaud Armora's dance, but simply laughed at empty seats. The boycotts affected the team's performance. Pep left, the Sheikh got bored, City plummeted down the table, confidence draining away from the mercenaries in blue, day by day. And then it happened. Liverpool won the league. Hashtag YNWA. I repeat, Liverpool won the league. It gives me a chill just thinking about it 8 years later. Feels like 80. From that moment, it was all downhill for us all. Naturally, the celebrations on Merseyside were as intense as they were long. A red haze hung over the north of England, Ireland and much of Scandinavia for many months. Jurgen Klopp was knighted and became the face of Colgate and the teeth. Similar honours were bestowed on James Milner and Jordan Henderson. Books were written, plays acted out, and then there was the poetry, the endless poetry. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with Benteke and Aquilani and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and, which is more, you'll be a Sir James Milner, my son. It was hell, a never-ending hell, a hell that got worse, got hotter somehow. Liverpool strengthened further in the summer, and soon, with City no longer rivals and Jose Mourinho signed up for another 6 years at Old Trafford, the coast was clear for Liverpool to dominate Europe once more, especially once rebellion started against Barcelona's Qatar state sponsorships and Real Madrid's controversial appointment of David Moyes as manager. And by now, over at Chelsea, Sarri lived permanently in an oxygen tent. Hashtag YNWA. Soon Liverpool football team and its fan base ruled the world, as they'd always wanted to. They could finally walk the walk as well as talk the talk. There were a lot of memes in the summer of 2019. The power they had energised them further and seeped into society. They were everywhere. I guess it was inevitable that soon they would hold positions of power and assert themselves on society as a whole. Now they control every facet of daily life and they cannot be defeated. A cult can only destroy itself. I try and keep the windows shut most of the time, not just because of the music, but also because the constant pyro stings my eyes. The rulers are big on flags and symbolism. Everyone worships he that is simply known as King Kenny, a mysterious otherworldly figure thought to look over the family. That's what we all are now, the family. Hashtag YNWA. Every night we all have to eat a lamb or beef stew. It was nice the first time, kind of. Less so the 300th time. I work 6 days a week making flags and scarves. It pays for the stew, kindling, and re-education lessons for the kids. The biggest flag I've made so far was over 20 feet tall, with something on it about chicken Kievs. It made little sense to me. Hashtag YNWA. Boss nights are now compulsory for our own sake, where we all congregate in the nightclub and sing Liverpool songs. Alay, alay, alay. The party ensure attendance via their gangs of red men. Their tickling sticks are not what you think they are. Failure to do so means a month-long shift making live a bird pin badges in a dusty basement. And no one wants that. A copy of Gideon's The Theory and Practice of Oligarchical Gegenpressing is by everyone's bed. Jürgen is infallible and all-powerful, though he still acquiesces to Kenny when necessary. It's not all bad, though. I get an extra day off on Sunday, as it's Virgil van Dijk Day. It's recognition not just of him being the greatest defender in the history of association football, though you know that already, but also of his 7 consecutive PFA Player of the Year awards. Hashtag YNWA. Life is a struggle, though. You'll never walk alone, players over loudspeakers in the street 24/7. It's driving me insane. Every day is a different style. It was being played on a harp yesterday. A fucking harp. To make matters worse, whether writing or speaking, we have to end at least one sentence a minute or each paragraph we write with a hashtag YNWA. Hashtag YNWA. I mean, just listen. Just listen to this. Occasionally it's broken up with Ferry Across the Mersey or the theme tune from Bread. Apparently that's linked to why I live on Boswell Street, next to Aveline Place. I digress. I must cut to the chase. It is not too late if I understand time travel correctly, which I still don't, to be honest. We must try, though. Try and change history. Yet again that duty falls on you, Blues. The world watches and the world waits. This is what you must now do, and I'm sure this time nothing can be worse than this. So ignore what I said on the last recording. Be blue and be proud. Stand up for your club. Support your team. Go to matches. Drink in the success. Buy a £3 Kit Kat at the bar. Buy every kit. Rubbish FFP on Twitter. And when you see Raheem Sterling, give him a hug from me. He wins the Ballon d'Or eventually, you know. Well, almost. It was pipped up by Trent Alexander-Arnold. Anyway, don't get downhearted when Wigan knock us out of the FA Cup again in March 2019. And February 2020, and January 2021. Keep the faith. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain. Though your dreams be tossed and blown, walk on, with hope in your heart. Oh shit, the indoctrination has worked. It's too late to save me, but it's not too late for you. Hashtag YNWA. And I'm being honest here, a post-apocalyptic landscape is not that bad now I come to think about it. It has its perks. Like when you find some fresh roadkill or the acid rain eases off for an hour or two. I for one welcomed our new communist overlords. The weather hasn't changed much, so you'll see the sun occasionally too. Just think of the alternative and decide what future you want. For you, for your children, for their children, for your guinea pigs. Oh, and put all your money on Harry Redknapp winning I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here in 2018. No, seriously. I hope this reaches you in time to make a few quid. So good luck, Blues. We're all counting on you. Hashtag YNWA.
Hi, this is Richard Edgell. You're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
For a pledge of $2 a month, you can hear our weekly bonus show on a wide range of city topics. There's more details on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Howard Hawking there. Now, before we move on, I want to say a big congratulations to one of the Blue Moon Podcast's panellists, Kieran Clark and his wife, Grace. We've got to say a shout out to them. They've just welcomed their first daughter. Esme has joined the family. So a big congratulations to Casey and Grace there. You know, we hope that she's settled in well and not keeping you up too late so that you can we'll have you back on the show very soon. Now it's time for Ask the Panel. This is the bit of the show where you send in your questions and we do our very best to answer them at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter, or you can get in touch through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. The first one has come in through the website from Leo Hammond. He asks, Phil Foden has signed a new 6-year deal. What are his chances of making it at City given Diaz and Sancho both decided to leave to progress? Josh, what do you reckon?
I think he's going to succeed, and we can already see he belongs, like Leon talked about early on in the podcast. This is also the type of contract that City have desperately needed. You sign these young players to extensions, new deals, and keep them home. But it's also how you generate funds and or build a lasting legacy by having these players live out their prime years with the home club. So I like it. I think he's going to succeed.
It's a funny one though, Josh, because if he could quite rightly turn around and say if Diaz starts getting minutes wherever he goes and Sancho's doing well at Dortmund, he could turn around and say, well, you rated me better than these two, so why am I not getting minutes here?
It's always a possibility, but that doesn't seem like the type of player that Foden is. When you get on teams that have a singular purpose of winning the title is the most important thing. And you understand that in order to do this, you need to do it as a team, and everybody has a role to fill. That is a concept that is ingrained in these young players. They understand you have a role to fill. Your role is going to get bigger, but right now you need to do your role. Let us do ours, and together we can move this engine toward titles.
And finally, Danny Thomas has been in touch on the emails to ask how worried should City fans be by Liverpool? They're not playing anywhere near as well as City this season, but yet they find themselves top of the table. Leon, should City fans be worried by Liverpool's ability to keep getting results when the chips look to be down?
In a word, no.
Really?
No. Don't get me wrong, Liverpool have a really good team and it's good at what it does. But what they do, I don't think they can do it for the whole season, number one, and I don't think they have another way of playing.
Will there be a point where either their results start to match the current performances or the performances have to start matching what they're going to get as results, if that makes sense? They need to step it up,
Yeah,
basically.
They need to step it up. I think at some point they're going to tire. They're going to tire, then they get injuries, and then it's that we've just missed out. I just can't see it, as well as they're playing at the moment, their front three are brilliant. I think they're lacking midfield. They've got not a bad back line and a good goalkeeper. But I think they lack... what's the word? They just lack a different way of playing. They have one way of playing and that's it. And it's 100 mile an hour for 90 minutes. And if they do try and slow down... You watch them in games. If they try and back off, they try to slow down and play another way, they get picked off. So they have one way of playing, which is 100 mile an hour for 90 minutes, and I don't think you can do that the whole season.
Josh, on the injuries front, though, it's City that are finding themselves with all the players that are strapped up in the physio room.
Yeah, but, here's the thing. If Liverpool had not qualified for the Champions League yesterday, I think you could maybe tip them to win the league because they would basically have nothing to do. They would. I think at that point, Klopp would, if he would have gone out that early in the group stage, I think he would have to put everything into winning the league because that's the only other way you can justify what they spent to go out that early in the Champions League. So City might be in the physio room, but Liverpool just gave themselves more to do in more games, and injuries are going to hit them, and I think it's probably better that City are having theirs now. Look at this. They're doing all of this without Kevin De Bruyne, and that would have seemed inconceivable last year. You almost couldn't think that without De Bruyne they could manage this, but here we are.
Right, well, I think that's quite a positive note to end on. So thank you very much to my two guests, from the American Citizens podcast, Josh Webb-Thompson.
Thank you.
And former City striker Leon Mike.
Thanks, guys.
If you want a little bit more Blue Moon podcast before next week's show, then do go and check out our Patreon show. We're discussing the Academy then and now, so go and have a look. Patreon.com/Blue Moon podcast is the way to do it. It's available for everybody that backs $2 a month or more. So thank you very much to my two guests. I've been David Mooney, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.